Wake-Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Yeah, we were just touching on the schedule, and that Monday night game, it's too bad that we had two teams that were, one won a Super Bowl, one was the NFC top seed, and now Monday night, yeah. Jared Dubin joins the CBS Sports as we go over the NFL and what we were expecting in Week 15 that already got started last night with the 49ers beating Seattle. On our Progressive guest line, Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Visit them for a quote at Progressive.com. How are you, Jared?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Your takeaway of Brock Purdy, he seems to be the man of the hour. Everybody wants to talk about how good he's playing and how much poise he has being a 22-year-old rookie and doing what he's doing with San Francisco. What was your take of him last night?
I mean, it's pretty impressive. It helps to have Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Kyle Shanahan scheming you into success, a defense that, doesn't let the opposing team move the ball, so you're in advantageous situations pretty much all game. But you're still a seventh-round rookie finding success in three consecutive games, and I think you have to be impressed by that no matter how good of a situation he's in.
How impressed are you with the 49ers defense? We've seen good defenses making runs to championships. Every time I see them, I get more and more like, this is really real.
Yeah, and it's even more impressive because they've been dealing with injuries throughout the entire season. Emmanuel Mosley's been out for a while. Jason Verrett's been out for a while. They haven't had Javon Kinlaw for a while. They lost Dante Johnson last week. Arik Armstead was out for a significant chunk of the season. Now, Kevin Givens was out this week too. Like, there's just so much talent there, and they're so well coached by D'Amico Ryan. It's not a defense that any offense would want to play against, I don't think.
For the Seahawks, it's a loss that now it's 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 6. They're 7-7 now after being 6-3. What does that loss mean, though? They're still in the playoff picture, but it does feel like things are falling apart. Tyler Lockett got hurt. They can't stop the run. Geno Smith may play well enough, but not well enough to win a game. But where do you see the Seahawks' status today?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're probably going to be on the outside looking in the playoffs just based on, the math of all the different teams around them, especially when you look at, they're competing with some teams where I can't remember who I saw this from on Twitter, but, the Giants, the Commanders, I guess I still have to call them, and the Lions, they all have opponents in Week 18 that might be playing for nothing, which is, a difficult spot to be in. Washington plays Dallas, the Giants play Philly, and the Lions play Green Bay. So it's entirely possible that those teams could all come away with wins just, from not really having to try all that hard against opponents that may not have anything to play for in that final week of the season.
How do you read the Lions situation? I mean, they were 1-6, and now they're one of the hotter teams in the league right now, and Jared Goff is playing very well. But this was a team that made no bones about it. They were stripping everything down last year. They were going to start all over. The quarterback of the future was somewhere else. Is Jared Goff going to be do you feel like he's playing for that future quarterback role, or do you think it's in the end it's a nice story, but the prize is somewhere down the road?
I mean, I tend to lean more on the latter. I feel like these days, if you have a quarterback that you can win with instead of a quarterback that you win because of, I feel like you're working from a disadvantage against the best teams in the league. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to go out and find whoever that guy is this offseason, but this also might be their best chance to do it. Like, they're probably not going to be picking, close to the top five in the foreseeable future after this, but they have that Rams pick
this year.
So if the guy is there, you might as well go get him. And that doesn't mean that guy has to replace Jared Goff right away. Maybe it can be like an Alex Smith situation where, you give Goff another year and you don't have to pay whatever dead money is on his contract for next season. I don't think it's that much, and I think they do save money by cutting ties, but that doesn't mean you have to get rid of him, and he can still keep the offense functioning at a, pretty high level as long as the protection is there for him. And basically as long as he has Amon-Ra St. Brown out there, because whenever he hasn't been out there, the offense is pretty much falling apart.
once again, we have a division, and these pop up every now and then where it's just weak, and it looks like a team with a non-impressive record will win it and go to the playoffs. It's keeping Carolina and Atlanta afloat in the division that's led by Tampa. But Tampa's intriguing. This is not a bad year statistically for Brady. He doesn't turn the ball over a lot. He's fourth in the NFL in passing. Yet they can't score. Why can't they score?
Their offensive line is not very good this year. Obviously, they lost, in essence, four of the starters from last season due to injuries and poor play and things like that. And, you know, free agency and retirement. And so that infrastructure that they had that made them so dangerous to deal with, because Brady would get the ball out so quickly, but not just quickly, like on short passes. He would get it out super quickly and push the ball downfield. That's not really happening quite as much this year. Everything's going to Chris Godwin and to the running backs. Like, you've seen the connection with Mike Evans has been off for the last several weeks. I don't think he's scored since like October or something like that, which is crazy for a guy who like has made his living scoring double digit touchdowns. I think he had like 25 over the last 2 years, and now he hasn't scored in like 6-7 weeks or something like that. So, I mean, I think a lot of it is the offensive line. And, you know, yeah, Brady is fourth in passing, but he's thrown a gazillion passes.
Yeah.
You know, and
because they can't score, right? Because they're getting back in games.
Yeah, he's taken more sacks this year than over the past couple. And obviously some of that is the offensive line, but some of that is also, you know, him not getting rid of the ball quickly enough at times. Like, they're still getting rid of it fast, but not quite as fast. And when they do, it's not going down the field. So it's, you know, you got to have more drives where, you know, you're moving the ball down the field in small chunks rather than creating those big plays. And it's just much more difficult to score that way.
How concerning are you with the Tennessee Titans now that they've lost three in a row? They've lost to two very good football teams, but that one at home against Jacksonville, they didn't look good in that. Is the wheels coming off a bit, or is this just a hiccup of something that's very fixable?
I mean, I wasn't that high on them when they were riding high, so I guess it's difficult for me to ascertain. Like, I didn't think that they were that good of a team. I thought they were playing sort of over their heads, which is something that, you know, I think Mike Vrabel has gotten his teams to do pretty consistently, and now I think their record has sort of leveled off to where the talent level probably is. I don't think they're necessarily in danger of, like, blowing that division lead or anything, but I also don't think they're necessarily, like, a serious threat to go that far in the playoffs. So that's kind of where I've been throughout the season, and their record has now just sort of come down to match that, I guess.
Can you give me a little idea of what you're thinking about in the AFC and that race of the 7-6 teams there? Every one of them's got an issue, of course, at 7-6. Patriots, Jets, and Chargers. How do you handicap those three as we head down to the final four games?
Well, I think the best unit on any of the three teams is the Jets defense, but the worst unit on any of the three teams might be the Jets offense.
Yeah.
It also might be the Patriots offense or the Chargers defense, but it's just like, because of that, I think the Chargers are maybe the highest ceiling team of the three. Now that they've got, you know, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen both back in the fold, I think you saw that their passing game just looked so much better when they actually have somebody who can threaten defenses down the field, like they were able to against the Dolphins last week. Like, just having somebody who can catch a pass more than like 10 yards down the field makes such a difference for them, especially since, you know, one of their quarterback's biggest strengths is that he can make, you know, any throw in existence. And, you know, their defense obviously still has some pretty significant challenges, and the Jets defense is going to keep them in games, and the Patriots defense is going to keep them in games. It might come down to, like, you know, who stays healthiest the rest of the way. Like, you know, the Patriots are dealing with some injuries on offense right now. Like, Ramondre Stevenson, Jacoby Myers are like the only guys that have been able to move the ball for them offensively. They're both hurt right now. You know, the Jets have Mike White dealing with an injury. Seems like he's going to play this weekend against Detroit, and then the Chargers have been dealing with injuries throughout the season, but whichever of those teams stays healthiest might just have the best chance.
I want to ask you this before we let you go, and it's about Dallas. I kind of get in a media world, we do it here too. We take questions and we may blow them up a little bit, but everybody seems to be asking the same question: if that win against the Texans and how they had to do it is concerning. Is that hyperbole, or do you not trust Dallas?
I'm a Cowboys fan, so I don't trust Dallas.
Okay, there you go. That seems to make sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's been since I was eight since they went to the Super Bowl, and over the last 27 years now, they've been teaching me not to trust them. So
right.
I don't trust them, even if they have the profile of a team that you should trust based on the way, you know, their defense has played all year and the way their offense has played since Dak got back from his injury. They're like leading the league in scoring by a mile. They're like, I think, second or third in EPA per play during that time, and they're just absolutely rolling. And, you know, yeah, they had a tough time against a team they shouldn't have had a tough time against, but, you know, so did, like, the Eagles against the Colts a couple weeks ago, and I don't think people were saying, you know, you can't trust the Eagles anymore after that game. Obviously, the Texans are worse than the Colts, you know, you don't want to struggle against them, but, I mean, it's one game. You still got the win. Like, I don't think it necessarily means anything about that you can't trust them, but I don't trust them because I've been taught not to trust them.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Jared, great stuff. Appreciate it. Happy holidays to you, my friend. Thank you so much for being a part of what we do here.
Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
You got it. Jared Dubin, CBS Sports. I like that. Yeah, but it's true. It is true. I think we do overblow games, though. It's the nature of human, you know, relationships to sports teams. I get it. It happens. And no matter how much, again, you've watched this league, no matter how many years you've watched it, where you've said to yourself over and over again, I know anybody can win. I know it's any given Sunday. I know it's still, there are games where you go, how in the world is this happening? And I think if you're a Cowboys fan and to watch them have to go all the way down the field in 98 yards to score a touchdown against the Texans in the final minute to win a game against the Texans at home, it naturally is going to raise questions. But Kansas City was in a dogfight with Denver, who came back from a 27-0 deficit to make it a one-score game. That was a one-score game for a lot of the second half. Like, you're just going to have games and moments where somebody's scheming you and they're going to beat you. It doesn't mean that the world is falling apart.
But the big difference is that we never thought Kansas City was out.
No, right. We right.
We
never thought they were going to lose the game.
Yeah,
right.
Kind of. Yeah. But the Cowboys were like,
yeah. To Kansas City's credit, they never trailed in the game, right? The Broncos just made it a lot more interesting when they
now,
came back.
If you're a Cowboy fan, do you hate the fact that you're most likely going to go to Tampa Bay?
Yeah, that would. Yeah, absolutely.
In the playoffs, in the first round of the playoffs?
Absolutely.
Because out of all the wild card teams or out of all the division winners, that's the one you'll most likely lose to.
And the Buccaneers would probably scream, hey, a couple of years ago we had to go to Washington for a playoff game. So, you know what? Whatever. You know? What was that line Matthew McConaughey has in Wolf of Wall Street? Fugazi, Fugazi, it's all the Wahoozy. Whatever it is, right? It's just the way this league is, man. It's natural. I mean, it's not. If your team has got 10 wins or 9 wins at the time, and you're struggling against the worst team in the league, you go, what's going on? But you know, those things happen. But yeah, I like what he said. I'm a Cowboys fan, so I don't trust them. Good point. All right, it's wake up calls. We wrap up the hour.